This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number, 877-217-5757. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. It was election night Saturday, also LSU football night. The Tigers defeated Florida 42-28. LSU now number two in the AP poll, heading into its date against Mississippi State Saturday at Starkville. Jim Nickel is the spotter for the LSU broadcast team, and of course he's the former Democratic Party chair and a prominent lobbyist. He's on the line with us today, along with Dan Clater in studio, the state senator for District 16 until a new senator is inaugurated, and that is questionable right now as to who that will be. An adjustment to the vote from Saturday night by Kyle Ardoin, the Secretary of State, has a tie for second place between Steve Carter and Franklin Foyle. On election night, Foyle was 8 votes ahead. Right now, they are both at 12,522. Beverly Brooks Thompson ran ahead of the field, the Democrat with 14,211 votes. And we're going to start there. This is Dan Clater's district. He backed Franklin Foyle, as did most of the Republican establishment. And it looked like Franklin Foyle had narrowly, and I mean very narrowly, ousted Steve Carter for second place. Instead, there is a tie because of an adjustment, I presume based on absentee ballots. How can this happen in this day and time, Senator Clater?
That's hard to explain, and so I'm looking forward to hearing the explanation from the Secretary of State's office on that. But I can tell you that I certainly know Franklin Foyle wouldn't want to be an illegitimate elected official. So I'm sure that will follow due process, follow the rule of law, and know how that should have turned out. But that is highly unusual that you have a change of 8 votes over the course of an evening.
This is a net 8.
Net 8, and you would be more surprised if it was a net 9, I guess, and or net 7. But
I think actually Carter lost. He lost 3 votes from Saturday, and Foyle lost 11. I don't know how that happens, but it's a net 8. And we have an election, and if one of the Republicans does not blink, then that means there's a 3-way race with a plurality winning, which means Beverly Brooks Thompson suddenly becomes the favorite. But you would think that the Republicans would get together and choose one of the candidates.
You would think, and also, Jim, just to point out, if you would click on, I see you're looking at the Secretary of State's website, if you'd click on the early vote portion, you would see that Franklin Foyle won that race outright. So I think it's a bit of a mistake to just assume that Ms. Thompson would win in a 3-way race, and that if you just counted the early vote, Franklin Foyle won handily.
But the overall vote, she got 34 and they got 30.
Yeah.
I just said she would be the favorite, and I stand by that, Dan Clater, supporter of Franklin Foyle. Now, Jim Nickel is on the line. He's been around the election block since 1986 as an operative and a lobbyist and an observer and a pundit. Jim Nickel, have you ever seen anything like this?
No, I haven't. And good morning to Senator Clater and to you, Jim, and good your morning. Listeners. It was my appreciation that there would be a runoff of the runoff. But Senator Clater, I'll defer to you as a lawyer. Is it your appreciation the law is clear that if it becomes a 3-way, it's a plurality winner? There's not another runoff after that?
The law is clear on that, but if there is a challenge, a judge can order that the race occur in a different way, as far as if there's some sort of funny business going on or any other reason. So there could potentially, under the law, be another runoff, but I don't see that actually happening. I think we're jumping too far ahead, in that if Kyle was off once, I wouldn't be surprised if he was off twice. And so when it happens that we have the actual hand count, I expect there's a high probability there'll be a clear winner at that point.
Well, Jim Nickel, you had Kyle Ardoin on this show. He's a good man, and he's also facing a runoff himself. And the last thing he needs to do is be embroiled in this kind of controversy. I can tell that Dan Clater and other Foyle supporters are not happy with him, but is it fair or unfair to point the finger at him either way?
I don't know if it's fair to point the finger at him. I mean, it's not an exact process when you deal with paper ballots and other things other than the machine. And he's got a good team over there. Nancy Landry, who used to be in the legislature, is very capable. She's an attorney. I'm sure she's involved in this whole process. And they'll dot every I. They know all the I's are on them. So I anticipate we'll have some clarity by the end of the week, one way or the other.
All right. And Matt Doyle, please take care of the music that Jim Nickel is hearing while he's trying to talk with us. 877-217-5757 is our number, and you can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're going to talk about the governor's election, but this development in the last few hours regarding Senate District 16, which is represented currently by Dan Clater, who's in studio with us, is just an amazing turn of events. And Beverly Brooks Thompson received 34% of the votes in the primary. Steve Carter and Franklin Foyle each received 29.7%. They're at 12,522 each. They're the best of friends, or at least they were, and then they ran against each other. They were seatmates in addition to being friends and representing neighboring House districts before this race. I would think, Dan Clater, this would probably be something that would affect their friendship.
Well, I think that that's certainly possible, but I think when it's all said and done and whatever turns out to be the case, that they'll be able to patch up whatever rift there has been in that. And just to kind of backtrack a little bit, I am a supporter of Foyle. That's obvious, but I am a bigger supporter of the rule of law. And so, however, every vote counts. Every person's vote is entitled to be counted. And so, wherever the chips fall on that, that's what I support as far as people's opportunity to vote.
Well, I'm suggesting that the two candidates appear in this studio and we flip a coin and we determine which one survives.
So what does that do as far as their people that voted for them? I think that's I don't personally think that's a good idea, but in the event that it is actually a tie, then we can talk about how that happens. Well, but yeah, there are a lot of different possibilities.
Yeah, and flipping a coin is one of them. Remember, NBA draft picks used to be settled on the flip of a coin. That's how the Milwaukee Bucks got Lou Alcindor, who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's not an unusual way to settle something, but you're right. At this point, nothing is going to be fair. It's going to be unfair to somebody unless they go to the post, and then they both may end up losing. So what do you do?
Yeah, so you make sure that the process occurred properly. I expect there'll have to be a hand count to make sure that all the votes are properly tabulated because the system's already in question. Once there's a hand count and we know what the actual vote was, probably the dust will settle at that point. But I don't know what the probability of a tie is in this big of a race, but it's probably about the same as a life-ending asteroid hitting Earth, but so it is.
Yeah, it definitely is.
You're the math man.
We're looking at over 40,000 votes cast here, and a tie. You're right. It's a bigger possibility to be struck by lightning than for there to be a tie. Now, the other thing, too, can you imagine, and we saw this with Lewis Lambert and Jimmy Fitzmaurice in 1979 in the governor's election, what if Carter had moved ahead of Foyle? That would be another disaster of sorts, because then all of Foyle's people would say, look, we were cheated.
Yeah, but there's going to be a question until they open the machines and do hand counts of all of it, and that we want to ensure, you know, I'm not best friends with Kyle, but I know he wants the integrity of the system to be protected.
And what an irony that Kyle Ardoin, 12 years ago, lost a state House race to Steve Carter by 87 votes. And now his adjustment has helped the guy who beat him by 87 votes. And Steve Carter, Franklin Foyle, Beverly Brooks Thompson, they're all three fine people, good candidates. And a listener, this is Holly in the Garden District, saying, I'm selling Beverly Brooks Thompson short. She says she could beat either one of them head up. Well, the numbers would reflect that would be a difficult thing to do. But, Jim, you as, I think, still a loyal Democrat, despite the fact that you represent people from both sides of the aisle, she is a very good candidate.
Jim is
a very strong candidate. I mean, she raised a lot of money for LSU. She has deep roots in that part of the Baton Rouge community, and that's why she performed well. But the math is not in her favor in a runoff. And I would just speak back to the tie, if it is a tie. You know, the old adage, every vote counts. You know, we all in politics, Senator Claytor, myself, others, always encourage people to go vote. Your vote counts. And here's another incident where that proves out to be the case. And I suspect there are some Franklin Foyle voters out there that went to the LSU game and didn't vote, or some Carter fans that maybe forgot to go vote, and they've got to be kicking themselves this morning, because just one or two of those people could have made a big, big difference for their candidate. And so, hey, always vote, because it always counts.
Hear, hear.
Yes, indeed. And there was another Republican in that race, Bob Bell, who received 1,825 votes. I'm sure Foyle and Carter would have loved to have had those. We're back after this time out with Dan and Jim. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we have two gentlemen with us, one in studio, Dan Claytor, and the other by phone, Jim Nickel. And they're on different sides of the political aisle when it comes to party affiliation, but both members, and Jim I would include as a member of the Action because he was chairman of the Democratic Party, they have shown a propensity to reach out and work with people who they often disagree with, and I appreciate that, and we need more people like them in public life. And now we have this weird scenario that we'll stay with a few more minutes with Franklin Foyle and Steve Carter, now in a tie for second place in District 16, represented by Senator Claytor. And if things do not change, they will be on the ballot November 16th with Democrat Beverly Brooks Thompson. And let's say hypothetically it's the same way it was this time, 34, 30, and 30. Well, if Thompson's at 30, 34, then she is the senator, and she would be a underdog, and it's no slight to her. I think she knows that, in a head-up race against either one, but she is a formidable candidate, and I don't want to dismiss the fact that she is probably one of the best candidates for a state legislative seat that the Democrats have had in a long time. She has 4 degrees, four, and as we know, we've got people in high places in Louisiana with 0 degrees. 877-217-5757. Laverne in Mid-City, you're going to have to pull her up, Matt. Laverne, you're on with Jim Nickel and Dan Claytor. Hi, Laverne.
Good morning.
Good morning, Laverne.
I know that y'all are in the specific race with Beverly and the two Republicans that you're talking about this right now, but I'd just like to say that I think the ladies across the state did really well in this election. Here in Baton Rouge, we've got Paula Davis. We've got Belinda Davis in a runoff with Barbara.
Freiberg.
And I just think that the women did really, really, really well across the state. The other thing I'd like to say is the amount of money that was spent out of state on our Board of Elementary and Secondary Education blows my mind. As an educator, I find it very disturbing that people from out of state have so much influence on our elections. I'll take your comments off air.
All right. Thank you, Laverne. Jim Nickel, your thoughts about what Laverne just cited.
Well, first of all, there was a huge effort to recruit more women to run for the legislature, and we did have a record number of women across the state run for the Louisiana legislature. And like any other political campaign, some were successful, some weren't. But I think everyone in Louisiana encourages women to get more involved in our political process. They're underrepresented in our legislature, and I'm all for it. I have 3 daughters and a wife, and I think the more women that are involved in all aspects of our society is a positive thing. I do think that the out-of-state money on BESSE, look, there's a big effort around the country by Bill Gates and a number of people, Michael Bloomberg, to see a lot of reform in our public education process. And look, that's the American way. They want to come into Louisiana and forward the agenda that they are forwarding around our country. We do, as a country, underperform against our international competitors, particularly in math and science and engineering. And so they want to see a push in Louisiana, and that's the way it goes. There's nothing illegal or improper about it, and that's what happens. So I would just like to point back to the Foyle-Carter situation. My understanding, and Senator Claytor probably knows better, is there will be a process at the Secretary of State's office where the Carter campaign, and I'm assuming even the Thompson campaign and the fall campaign, will be able to select two representatives to go to the machines and be present with the officials from the Secretary of State's office and witness each of the machine counts, all of the hand ballot counts, which are absentee ballots. And so all the campaigns will be present and able to examine everything that happened and witness the final number. It won't be done in private. Everybody will have their eyeballs on it. Is that right, Dan?
That's my appreciation as well, Jim. The only people missing on that that I think would be important is somebody that represents nobody, the press. Mm-hmm. I think that would be important for somebody able to observe that as
Sunshine.
Well.
Sunshine, but weird things can happen. As Dan notes, courts can intervene, and we saw that in the year of 2000 when the U.S. Supreme Court shut down a recount in Florida that would have given Albert Gore victory over George Bush.
And there'll be no hanging chat.
No, there'll be no hanging chats.
Well, but
we don't have punch cards. So
yeah, but I think we do have something that kind of looks like a hanging chad, which would be the ballots that were disqualified for whatever reason, illegible signature, et cetera, and so forth. So on the written ballot, you have room for interpretation there. And so it's a messy process, but I am absolutely positive that everybody wants it done properly so that there's confidence in our system. So I think it will be done eventually properly.
Based on what is known now, I don't think it's appropriate to blame the Secretary of State for this because this is just something that happened, and it would have been far easier for him if the recount or adjustment, whatever you want to call it, showed what we had on Saturday night with FOIL leading by 8 votes.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I think it should be done right the first time. That instills confidence, but it is what it is, and I think everyone's doing their best to correct it. Well, talking about Laverne's call earlier, we also had, not just in our area, but other women elected to office. There's the Heather McLeod from Central Louisiana came in, and there is more representation of women in the legislature, but I represent women, and women represent men when you're down there as well. And so,
women make up most of the electorate, and we're going to have to let Jim Nickel duck out. I think he's got a meeting regarding exactly what we've been talking about. But Jim Nickel, I think it's close to 54% of the electorate in Louisiana is female. And there are those who say that John Bel Edwards really ticked off some progressive females with his signing of that restrictive abortion bill. He had wiggle room to veto it if he would have said, I need a rape and incest exception, but he signed it. And maybe they didn't vote for Rasponi or Abraham, but they may not have voted at all Saturday. What's your take on what happened in the governor's election?
Well, he did have a significant gender gap in all of the polling that I saw prior to the election day.
In his favor.
In his favor. But in a race that's going to be, I think, very close in a runoff, you're right. Again, back to the old cliche, every vote counts. He will have to do something in that regard to try to get some of those women who may have found that signature on that bill to be distasteful. And, you know, he's got to motivate them to get out and vote and hold their nose for whatever reason. But this governor's runoff is going to be, you know, a humdinger. I mean, we're fixing to see 30 days of absolute war, and every angle, every demographic, every specific targeting that can be pulled out by both the Rasponi campaign and the Edwards campaign, we're going to see it. And when you talk about out-of-state money on DESE races, get ready for some out-of-state money in the governor's race. You know, I wish I owned a radio station or a TV station. There's going to be a lot of money spent here in a very compressed amount of time.
Or even a mail house would be nice to own.
Yeah. Or a print shop,
And, of course, Rasponi has a personal fortune that he has used. He could end up spending another $10, $15 million. And, Jim, as you know, quite often money relates to votes. He has a resource that the governor doesn't have as far as personal wealth.
Yeah, well, he'll get some injection of national Republican money and state Republican money now. So I suspect he won't have to rely on as much of his own checking account as he had in the primary. But I don't think he'll be reluctant to reach into it if he needs to.
Well, he's a 70-year-old newcomer. He's never run for office. That sounds familiar. And he is in a runoff, and Republicans got 51% of the votes. Saturday. Now, in 2015, Republicans got 58% in the primary, and John Bel Edwards won. But, Jim, you know things are different now.
Oh, they are. I mean, there's a big, big difference between 4 years ago, and it's called Donald J. Trump. And he is going to inject himself in the state, I think, very heavily. This is a blue island and a red sea, and they want this seat badly. So, you know, Trump will, I think, pull out all the resources he can to try to help Rasponi. And I think for the Edwards campaign, the challenge is make it a Louisiana race, not a national race. And I think the Rasponi campaign will try to make it a national race for obvious reasons. The president's very popular here. So it'll be a battle on whose message resonates with that small number of swing voters. We'll see.
Thank you, Jim Nickel. Let's catch up soon. It'd be good to hear your voice right before the November 16th election. And we'll return with Dan Clater and you. 877-217-5757 is your number. Back to the phones after this pause for the news. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle and Kirby Ferry is producing, and Dan Clater continues with us, the state senator from District 16, which is now in question. There will be a runoff, and it may be a three-way runoff because of a tie for second. That's where we are right now, a tie between Franklin Foyle and Steve Carter. 877-217-5757. 229,142 more people voted in 2019 than in 2015 in the governor's election. And it turned out that John Bel Edwards, who was thought by many of his supporters to be right at 50%, comes in at 46.6, Eddie Rasponi 26.6%. So it's 47-27 as they move to a November 16th runoff. Edwards is in a runoff despite getting more than 50% of the votes in Jefferson Parish, 52% in Jefferson Parish, generally a Republican stronghold, 62% in East Baton Rouge Parish, and this is in a multiple-candidate race, 87% in New Orleans. He carried Caddo overwhelmingly. He lost by 100 votes to Ralph Abraham in Lafayette, a little over 100. And so in the big cities, he did well, but in rural Louisiana, Eddie Rasponi and Ralph Abraham collectively got enough votes to force a runoff. Rasponi only got a majority in one parish in Louisiana, Livingston Parish. 877-217-5757. Chuck and Scott. Chuck, you're on the air with Dan Clater.
Yeah, I'm interested in your guest's thoughts on why a candidate would spend $11+ million on an office that will never pay anywhere near that. And if you tell me that it's because he wants to serve, why did he wait till he was 70 to start developing an interest in serving the state?
Well, maybe he didn't have $11 million when he was 50 or 60. But I give the man the benefit of the doubt on that. And John Georges, by the way, of the Advocate, spent about $11 million in 2007. He got 14%. So sometimes people, Dan Clater, that call to public service includes opening your checkbook. And you've done that a time or two. I don't think you've spent $11 million, but you put your personal funds in races, haven't you?
I have. And also, for whatever it's worth, the legislative salary is presented as around $18,000, but with per diem and all the other things that happen, it gets closer to $28,000. So why would somebody spend that type of money that is spent for that job as well? And it is for service, and you have ability to do it at different times in your life. But to some degree, I would agree with the man as far as, boy, it sure is expensive to run for public office and to get out there and serve, where in the legislature, what you're seeing is retired and personally wealthy people more and more coming in there, and you're not seeing too much of the average Joe, so to speak, in there. And we need all kinds of people in there to represent us and have a representative group of folks down there. We have insurance agents, undertakers, retired teachers, and things of that sort. But the call to public service is difficult.
Well, and when you win a race, quite often you've got people ready to retire your campaign debt. When you lose, your friends are few and far between. And that's Eddie Rasponi's going to find out one way or the other that if he's governor, that $11 million he spent, it goes away. That number is going to be retired by people who want access. And, of course, they are hopeful that he will be in their camp if they need him. That's just the way the process works. But if he loses, he's probably going to have to eat that $11 million plus whatever he spends in the runoff. If he loses by one vote, there aren't going to be a lot of people lining up to help Eddie if he doesn't come home a winner, Dan Clater.
No, I would agree with that. And I'm sure he's considered that and willing to take that.
And he will have lots of money, but John Bel Edwards will have lots of money, too. That should not be the primary factor in the runoff, but it will be. And Eddie Rasponi, based on the fact that he can write the check, he may very well be able to spend another $5 or $10 million in the next 5 weeks that could make a difference in a close race. And I think most people are expecting a close race at this point.
I think they are. And as long as we're talking about money, it's just not personal money that goes in play there. It's the dark money that comes in for these different PACs that support and knock down candidates. To me, that's even more mysterious as far as what's going on and where did that money come from.
Well, Lane Grigsby, big player. He knocked down John Bel Edwards, I think, some with the ads that he was involved with. The case of Johnny Anderson, perhaps that dissuaded some women and others from voting for the governor.
Those were strong ads.
They were strong ads, and they were meant to be used in the runoff, but they had to use them early because they weren't so sure there was going to be a runoff, but they got their runoff. So are we going to have more October surprises?
I don't think so. I think it's just going to be straightforward from here on out, but it's going to be a bare knuckles and elbows type of fight all the way through is my expectation. Not too much building up of any one candidate. It's going to be tearing the other ones apart most likely. But one of the things on all that where one of the, I think it sort of relates to the previous caller, is I was elected to represent the people of District 16. Governor John Bel Edwards was elected to represent the entire state. I felt it incumbent on me when I was elected to work with the people that were also elected. So it's incumbent on the legislature, whoever wins, to work with that person without giving up your morals, without giving up your principles. But there's a fair amount of common ground across the board. Is that an endorsement for Edwards? No, that's an endorsement for the process as far as it's incumbent on everyone to work together once the election happens. And I'm not meaning that to be a segue, but I think that's a fair segue to the St. George matter, and that matter has been approved by the people. And I didn't particularly care for it in the beginning, but I did care for allowing those people the opportunity to vote and go through the process and not change the rules on them. And now they've won their election, and we should all try to work with them. But is it going to happen? Probably going to be a good bit of litigation there as well.
I would think so. And St. George becomes the fifth largest city in the state with 86,000 people. The vote was 54-46%. And this was a largely conservative electorate. 50% of the voters were Republican. And in Louisiana, the Republican Party does not have a third of the overall voters, I don't believe, as far as actual numbers. But 50% of the voters in St. George, Republican, only 24% Democrat, and 81% white. So 86,000 people move into St. George out of Baton Rouge, which moves Baton Rouge to 139,000 people, meaning that it falls to third or fourth in the rankings of cities among population. New Orleans 1, Shreveport 2, and basically Lafayette and Baton Rouge now in a tie for third with St. George fifth. And it does all kinds of things. For example, the crime rate in Baton Rouge will go up exponentially on a per capita basis because most of the crime areas are in areas that remain in Baton Rouge. So we may very well have, based on this vote Saturday, without anything actually changing, the most murderous city in America, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Dan Clater?
Yeah, well, and we all have to get involved on that and do what we can to bring that rate down. And I do believe the mayor and the district attorney and the chief have all been working to do their best on that. But we got to do better. We're not making enough headway on that. But as you were talking about the numbers, one of the things that occurred to me is a lot of the laws that are out there are based on census data and how many people live in a particular parish, where when a bill is filed late, if they didn't say we're doing this for East Baton Rouge Parish or the city of Baton Rouge, they use demographics. And so there's probably going to have to be a fair amount of adjustment to the law as it relates to that. But I expect everybody to be able to work through it. I don't disagree with the mayor's position as it related to the mayor. You know, she wanted to keep it together, and she did her duty and job as that was concerned, as far as I'm concerned. But now the people have spoken, and we have to work with that. So that'll be interesting. Going back to the governor's election, I think part of what we're talking about as it relates to turnout and every vote counts. I do think there was a fair amount of people that just stayed home and didn't turn out for the governor for the reasons that you talked about earlier, and a more energized Republican base. Maybe not so much on Trump actually coming here and energizing the base, but more on some of the national politics as it relates to the impeachment process. I know this sounds hard to believe, but frequently I'll have people ask me, how's everything in Washington? And I'm like, I don't work out of Washington. I work here. And so that comes to be a problem.
You did run for Congress.
I did.
He was defeated by one Garrett Neil Graves. Dan Clater was, but he has represented the people of District 16 in the Louisiana Senate with distinction, and now he is soon to be a private citizen, a lawyer, and he does speak as an attorney who has experience in election matters when we're talking about the fiasco that is now in place in District 16. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Jim, and to your guests, good morning. Is, you know, St. George, you know, it happened, you know, it's happened before. The comparison, I look at it, is like Houston. Now, you got Baytown and Katy and Humble and Pearland, but they all consist in living off of Houston and it survived. Can Baton Rouge mirror that same work that you... Your information is coming out of, your income is coming out of Baton Rouge. Can Baton Rouge adapt with the way Houston did it and survive and grow and get bigger? Thank you.
Yeah, I missed the last. Is the what going to get bigger?
Well, he's talking about the reconfiguration of the city itself. But Houston, you know, when you look at these major metro areas, Houston has more people than does the state of Louisiana, the metro area. But the city itself is a million or so people. It's not in the metro area is 5.5 million. So
right.
Is this going to be the big thing that some people believe as far as just the death of the parish? That's the question I think that we have.
No, and I don't think it will be the death of the parish. And I think we have creative people in government that'll work hard to make it work at all levels. I do think one of the differences between Baton Rouge in Houston is we have a bunch of government workers that commute in.
877-217-5757. We're back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Dan Clater, the state senator from District 16, going the distance with us. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. We do want to congratulate the other members of statewide government, those leading various departments who won, various agencies. Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser got more votes than anybody else Saturday with more than 884,000 votes. He's back for another 4 years. Attorney General Jeff Landry won re-election over Ike Jackson, who got 34% with a low-budget campaign, but Jeff Landry is back for another 4 years as AG. Mike Strain won his race for Ag Commissioner. He's back for a fourth term. Mike Strain got 57% of the votes, and John Schroeder got 60% of the votes in his race for treasurer being reelected. Kyle Ardoin and Gwen Collins Greenup are in a runoff for Secretary of State, primarily because a gentleman named Thomas J. Kennedy III, a Republican who spent nothing more than his qualifying fee, received 19% of the votes. People obviously thinking they were voting for John Kennedy in the Secretary of State's race. So Kyle Ardoin, and it says something about our electorate and the lack of attention when something like that happens. And Jim Donilon, in the fight of his political life at the age of 74, he withstood a major challenge from Tim Temple, 49, who ran a gallant and good campaign. But Jim Donilon, the old war horse, is back for 4 years. He'll be the longest serving insurance commissioner in history if he serves out his term. He got 53% of the votes, so congratulations to all of them. 877-217-5757 for Dan Clater. Patrick in St. George is calling. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, Jim. By the way, you did really good coverage, election coverage on, I think it was WAFB. I was watching it live stream.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I actually didn't vote either way on the St. George thing. I was so undecided. It's the one thing I left blank on my ballot. I'm real concerned about planning and zoning and permitting process now that, I don't know if you can maybe do that in another segment this week, but if you could get, you know, I'm just kind of curious how that's going to work, and and that's my biggest concern. I do like the fact that we'll have our own school district, but other than that, I'm concerned about the rest of it.
All right,
Patrick. So right off, you won't have your school district. That's a whole different issue that may or may not come into play. But as it relates to permitting, I think that that's one of the easier things that cities will be able to negotiate. The big issue now is who is the governor going to appoint as the transition representatives, mayor and council people. There'll be names suggested to the governor from the various representatives in the area, and that may include me. I may not make any suggestions, but if the governor is hoping to work with those folks, I expect that he'll appoint people that intend to move the process forward. He vetoed the transition bill that I brought, so it may turn out that he doesn't really want to work with them that much, and may appoint obstructionists. So I hope he doesn't do that. I don't think that's the kind of person he is. I think that he'll appoint folks that want to work to move the area forward. But that's the next big step, is who are these transition officials that the governor appoints. And there's a timeline related to that. The election results have to be confirmed and be made official. And then there's about a 30-day period after that before we'll know what's really happening there. But permits is actually one of the easier things. The more difficult things that you heard folks wrestling over is debt.
All right. Bill Bryan, who used to work for the Attorney General's office in elections, says he's said we don't have tie elections in Louisiana. But what happens? This is uncharted territory.
The Attorney General's office ordinarily is not involved until there's some sort of criminal allegations. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see.
But the law right now is, as you read it, well, yeah, judges can intervene, as we heard from Henson Moore a few weeks ago when a judge intervened in his congressional race in 1974. But and the Supreme Court, which intervened in the Albert Gore, George Bush race. But independent of that, if there's no judicial action, can there be a plurality winner, or would that be challenged?
It's all subject to challenge, Jim. And so I think that where I said the AG could intervene if there is a claim, but the people that have the standing are the candidates themselves, as I read the law. And so they wouldn't be able to challenge it, I don't believe. So,
okay. Mary in St. George. Mary, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I did not vote for the city. I live in the Village St. George area. But the thing that concerns me is, how does a non-existent city have millions of dollars in surplus funds?
Well, the proponents indicate there will be millions of dollars in surplus funds because a lot of the commerce in the city is located within the boundaries of St. George, and they believe that they'll have enough money and more to support schools and a new police department and a new city hall and all this stuff. Now, that's what proponents do. They paint rosy pictures, and opponents paint not-so-rosy pictures. Who's right, Dan?
Neither one is completely right. We know that. And when she said a non-existent city have surplus, well, there is no surplus, and that there's no city to have that. And by vetoing the transition district, there may even be a question about what happens to the taxes during the transition period. But I'm confident in the leaders on both sides that they're going to be able to work something out eventually that works.
And there are a number. I mentioned how Thomas Kennedy, a guy who many people, I'm sure, thought they were voting for John Kennedy for Secretary of State, got almost 20% of the votes. So there are many people who went to the polls on Saturday thinking that they were getting rid of Sharon Weston Broome. Well, she is still the parish president. That has not changed. And then there were others who were not in St. George who thought they had a vote, and they found out the hard way. They didn't.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, Jim, but I ordinarily give voters a whole lot of credit saying that they know what they're voting for, so I kind of disagree
most do,
with it.
Most do, but how does a fellow like Thomas J. Kennedy III, who spends no money, just puts his name on the ballot as a Republican, get almost 20% of the votes?
I think that's a vote for neither type of thing, myself.
There were some other options. There weren't just three candidates.
Yeah, well, I
think you've got on your rose-colored glasses, Senator Clay.
Well, I believe in the people, so I like my rose-colored
glasses. I believe in the people,
glasses.
Too. I just think we need to be better informed. David in Atlanta. Hello, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, the Trump rally in Lake Charles was covered on Fox News Channel, and Congressman Abraham proudly said, I introduced a resolution to ban Nancy Pelosi from the Congress, which I thought was making a fool out of himself. That's why politics is so partisan, and that's why things never get done in Washington. And I think that was reflected in the fact that he ran third in a three-man race.
All right. Well, David, as a person who's called this show many times for the years, I suspect you're for John Bel Edwards. And if Edwards is going to win, he's got to get about 12 to 15% of those Abraham voters. So the last thing he wants to do right now is to be out there criticizing Ralph Abraham. He's going to be criticizing Eddie Rasponi. And they went after each other pretty good. Rasponi gave it to Abraham, and he had the money to do so. Abraham did not have the resources financially as Eddie Rasponi. And yet Ralph Abraham, being the good soldier he is in his party, he immediately endorsed Eddie Rasponi. That's unlike what happened 4 years ago when Scott Angel did not endorse David Vitter, and Jay Darden endorsed the other guy. He endorsed the Democrat for whom he now works, John Bel Edwards. So Edwards has to get some Abraham votes. Can he get any? Can he get 10%? Can he get 15 or more?
I don't expect that he gets much, if any at all, of Abraham voters. That the best that John Bel can hope to do is keep those Abraham voters at home.
Mary in Mid-City. Hello, Mary. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, I just wanted to ask, what were y'all thoughts about the Amendment 4 that got defeated in New Orleans to allow the property tax exemptions for affordable housing, especially since, you know, a majority of voters in Orleans Parish voted in favor of it, but it seems like the rest of Louisiana didn't, and so it was defeated.
All right. Thank you, Mary. Dan?
My general thought on that is that most people, homeowners, are having questions about the different exemptions that pop up. I think they're pretty comfortable with exemptions for veterans and the disabled and things of that sort and the elderly, but probably a high level of discomfort on exactly where that was going. The ballot language perhaps didn't do justice to what was being asked either.
Mark on Highland Road, please be brief, Mark. You're on the air with Dan Clater.
Good morning. My question is the magnet schools, and I need to know what happens to the kids that they are in the magnet schools, and I read that about 3,000 or 4,000 kids, they get displaced.
Okay, that's not happening at this point. What the vote was on a city. It was not on a school district, and so that's a step further down the line if the people that live in that area choose to do so, but I can certainly agree that it was a strong motivator, but that was not what the vote was for. It was for the city, which would be a condition precedent most likely in that when they first came out asking for a school district some time ago, they said you got to have a city first.
Senator Clater, thanks for joining us today, and now that you're about to be a private citizen again, we'll be calling on you more often. Thank you for sharing your insights today. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens in his Senate district.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Until tomorrow, stay tuned.